smile in the mirror as a reminder, I am alive and I am enough. My heart will dance to the rhythm of hope. Ask my body how she feels today, how her day was spent. Is she comfortable? I will thank her for another day. Lift her out of bed during the night she is crumbling. Acknowledge the 3 steps forward, even after the 2 steps back, because there is still 1 step worth appreciating. There is an entire world waiting. I just need her to see it. Progression is laughter after an insult, a deep breath before a meltdown, and sometimes, sorry, I'm a human being, trying her best, and when I fall, I will triumph on my way back up. Keep love close until the glass tips over. I may not know what that is just yet, but I at least know if it is empty, I must pour onto me before asking for a drink. I will practice, I will practice, I will practice everything in my power to honor thyself. Communicate my value. Break traumatic cycles. The obstacles that taught me good things don't come easy. Recognize when I am the problem and purge in the imperfections without criticism. I will destroy the layered cement covering my dirty soft wings, create something new, feel every cell flourish in adrenaline, eyes closed, allow tears to cleanse this anguish. The God within me will rise from ashes to ashes, dust to dust through the soil of my skin for the world to see. The oracle in my sun, the gaze in my moon. From this day forward, I promise to have and hold myself whole.
And what was the name of that piece?
Oh, it was titled 11-11.
11, okay.
Yeah, the symbology behind the title is, in morality, those numbers signify new beginnings. So I kind of wrote this as like a affirmations poem to just kind of start new. You know, like you're trying to kind of get your life in order and change to kind of like just get your shit together, you know, and
yeah, transformation.
And really, yeah, like that gets really hard times. So kind of a way for me to uplift myself when I was ready to just kind of go up.
Okay, so you were, I guess, in that transitional space where you can kind of see you need to take it to the next level, and this is kind of like helping you get there now.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
So, it's definitely like a back and forth kind of process, you know, like you progress a little and then you have your setbacks and stuff like that. So this is kind of just like for when you have that setback.
Which happens a lot. Oh my yeah. God. That speaks volumes. Yeah. Cause you're also putting, personal touches in there for yourself, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
All my poems are mainly just about what I'm experiencing, but if I'm going to share it, you know, it's because I feel like somebody needs to hear this, somebody could relate to what I'm talking about, so it's still always about me, but I want to share that part of me with people and hope that, like, they can just connect to what I'm saying.
I feel you on that, because when I've shared things, it's always been about the same. It's personal. It's me trying to work something out. And sometimes that takes the shape of writing it out or in a poem or, you know, some creative method. And yeah. And when you put it out there and you see folks vibing with it, you're like, wow. You know, I think it's very reassuring. And it's also kind of surprising no matter how many times you do it. I don't think that feeling is ever going to go away.
Yeah.
So this is Orale Bo Heights, the quarantine edition, doing this interview with Astrid over the internet. Astrid, introduce yourself.
I'm Astrid, and I'm a spoken word poet. I'm Salvadorian. I'm also a writer and contributor for Ellie Taco.
Hey.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's kind of all of what I do.
I'm sure you do more, but yeah, for this interview, you are a creative, you're a writer in so many different ways, and a performer, which we'll talk about a little later. But yes, thank you for making time to do this interview. I know we initially had this scheduled back in March, and then the whole world shut down. So we kind of, you know, just took it in stride. And yeah, thank you for reaching out again and reminding me that you were still down to do this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so let's just do a little bit of checking in. How's your quarantine life going?
It's been okay. I think there was definitely some panic at first because there was so much uncertainty. But after like the first week of where everything just kind of got shut down in like the middle of March, I don't know. I just felt at ease. I felt like a lot of it was just more so panic from media. I think the threat was there, but I definitely felt like it was being exaggerated a bit, so people got very scared. But from what it seems like, they've been able to contain everything, so I'm not so worried about stuff anymore, and I was able to get everything I needed to, which was also kind of misconstrued. I mean, it was hard to find stuff at the store, but you know, for the most part, like, everything worked out.
Yeah, no, I totally feel you on that, because I can safely say none of us, for a lot of us, we've never been in this type of situation where we have to stay home for such an extended amount of time. Not because, you know, we decide to do it, but because it's in, like, the public safety interest of everybody doing their part and staying safe and being at home and the progression of that, right? Like you said, the media did sensationalize a lot of it in the beginning, and it still does, which is why I actively choose not to be reading the news constantly. I might, during a normal week, I might spend an hour just reading mostly like the headlines and what is like the most current updates in terms of numbers, things that are moving, just a lot of that moving information, because there are, ever since all of this started happening, there's been limitless and like just a ridiculously amount of like think pieces from every news site you can think of how to bake, how to like take care of your mental health, how to do this, how to do that, how to do all these other things that I guess for some folks it's completely new to, you know, like shut yourself in and close off the world in your home. But for somebody like me, you know, in the past, I've gone through bouts of depression, and in those episodes, shutting myself at home and just kind of like being very minimal in terms of like my social interactions and being outside and, you know, just being just at home and a homebody. It became very easy for me because of that.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then you have a roommate too, no?
Yeah, I do. You know what's funny? I never really saw her before quarantine. Like, we were just so in and out, and now we have to be at home. So we've just been hanging out and, like, watching Netflix a lot. I think that's been helpful, too. Just, nice. Like, getting to have downtime, you know? Also, I think I felt like there was a lot of bad that came out of this, but also a lot of good. Like, there was just so much time to just kind of be for a while, you know, because everything was on pause.
Yeah.
It was really helpful to kind of like declutter and have so much going on all the time. I think it definitely made me realize that I needed to kind of slow down, because I wasn't really processing everything as it was happening.
No, I definitely feel you on that. Yeah, because I think most of us in their normal circumstances, you know, we're running Monday through Friday from work to maybe like after hours meetings, and then on the weekend playing catch up with our lives and then doing it all over again. So for like the first 2 weeks, I was just really happy because I didn't have to go to work, honestly.
Yeah.
I have a commute from Bolt Heights to Culver City that under normal circumstances would have taken me an hour, maybe an hour 20 one way. So it's like 2+ hours commuting back and forth and on a day, 5 days a week. And it's that first week, I was just like, wow, I can wake up, you know, when like at a reasonable time and have breakfast without being in a hurry. And by the time that I would be making my way out the door to be stuck in traffic, I would just, you know, walk on over into my room and turn on the computer.
Yeah, that's so true. You like got to actually enjoy your morning and kind of get a little routine going instead of just jumping out of bed.
Mm-hmm. So I did want to ask you this before we transition. Has being at home and having more time, have you done anything or learned something new in between all of this? Because with me, I became more of a cooker. So I started cooking. And I don't know if you've seen this. There's this YouTube channel with this abuela where she's like cooking and she's like, de mi rancho a tu casa.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so I've been like watching that show and just trying some of the recipes.
Oh, nice. I bet they're so good.
I don't think so.
You know what? Yeah, I actually have been cooking more too. But I think that would probably be it. I've started going on super long walks every day with my dog.
Mm.
Like, I would take her on walks, but now every single day, I always go on a long walk.
It's both more beneficial for both of y'all.
Yeah, it's been really nice. Yeah, just eating in more, saving so much money. Because I'm not going out to eat and, like, drink and stuff.
Spending money on gas, things like that.
Yeah, and then just my health. I do feel, like, more well-rested. I feel like my mind is more alert, so I think that's been helpful too. But I honestly haven't been super productive. I am working on a book, so I was kind of working on my manuscript here and there.
Nice.
But yeah, not too much, just because I was really on top of it before this quarantine happened, so it was nice to take a little break.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I think that's one thing everybody is learning to balance for themselves is that, like you said, in the hecticness of the beginning of the first 2 weeks, we were all just trying to get a better sense of what's going on and how long this was going to last and, you know, trying to find some reassurance. I know I was in some places. But then for me, I didn't feel guilty that I wasn't being productive. I still have, you know, my responsibilities at my job and I take care of them, but I am not on my computer 24/7. And, you know, I don't feel guilty when I go take a snack break or like a TV show break and watch an episode of something and then go back to work.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I'm just, like also trying to not be distracted too, because you just have your phone so readily available and there's so much going on that you want to tune in. So yeah, that's another thing.
A lot of DJ battles. Mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, since you mentioned it in the beginning, you are an LA Taco contributor. So as we were talking before we started recording and just checking in, I mentioned that one of the first pieces you had on LA Taco was one of your poems. So how did that relationship get started?
Oh, you know what? I don't recall why I decided to submit this poem. I think somebody wrote something, or I just know gentrification was a big topic at this time, and I had a poem about it. And I had come across LA Taco because a friend told me about it, but I really don't recall why. Like, I don't know if there was a submission for them, but I just remember kind of sending it, because all that I look back on it, I'm like, that's really random. Like, what prompted that? But yeah, I just sent them this poem, and then they ended up really liking it, and I think that's when I started to realize the platform that LA Taco really had. I hadn't really read up on them too much prior to that. And then they were looking for writers. So because I had already been following them from that initial contact that we had made, I just told them that, you know, I really wanted to put on for poetry. That's my, like, main craft and what I really love to do. And I think a lot of people don't really know about it and all it could really offer. So I just wanted to highlight some really awesome poets that I knew. And it was so different because I don't know if that's happened in any other publication where you have a column dedicated to poets. But it was really awesome that I was able to do that. And as I started to do it more and more, I really loved it. It was definitely a different type of writing because I was so used to just writing poetry.
Yeah.
But getting into more journalism was a whole other realm. And I always knew, like, I wanted to do all types of writing, but that was, like, my first attempt outside of the poetry realm. So it was a big change for me, but I ended up discovering something totally new that I really like.
Yeah, no, you're a natural. So some of the folks that Astrid has featured in the past, then you can look all of these up on LA Taco just by typing in Astrid and searching for her pieces. But you have interviews with like folks with like Matt Cedillo, Jessica Salgado, and a lot of other community-based folks who normally wouldn't be written about or interviewed in non-creative arts poetry spaces. Yeah. So, yeah, you made the transition seamless. Did you have any help? Did you like call on somebody who has maybe like a journalistic background, or did you do research? Like how was that transition? Because like you said, yeah, you went from creative writing to now to journalistic.
Yeah, so I don't know. I remember that it was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to write about this person. And I just had a general idea of like the things that I wanted to talk about. Because I guess my upper hand was that I was familiar with the poets, like I was fans of theirs, so I kind of already had an idea of what they were about, so it was easy to just kind of like go off of that and want to highlight that because I know already what they sort of stand for. But other than that, the actual writing was pretty much just all sort of freestyle.
Nice.
And then the editing portion, at that time we had Daniel Hernandez, was our lead editor, and so he just was very, very helpful in terms of mentoring me, because we did kind of go back and forth with certain revisions, doing a few layers of editing before it was published, but those were all really good learning experiences. So as I kept submitting more, I felt like my writing kept getting better, but because of the lessons like he was really teaching me that I needed to apply, that really were key, so that way when people read something in journalism, like, it's new, not, you know, all fluff and just kind of not really factual, because I think that's the main thing, that you're reporting facts, you're reporting stories, but it's done so in a certain way that isn't really seen in other types of writing. So I had to kind of, like, figure it out along the way, so a lot of it was really just improvised.
Yeah, no, there's no better teacher than, you know, just doing it, and practice always makes perfect, which brings me to, I think one of the more journalistic stories that you did was you covered the opening for the, as I'm looking at it right now, because I went to the show and I bought the art book, the Contact High Hip Hop Photo Show at the USC Annenberg Space for Photography. How was that?
Yeah, that was so awesome. That's, like, honestly my favorite experience so far in journalism, because I got to go see the opening night of a really, really big photography event. All the photographs were centered around hip-hop culture, and I love hip-hop and rap music, so I was really excited to be able to go and kind of see these iconic photos and photo shoots where you got to see other photos that were taken that have never been published before. You just always know that one image, right? Like Biggie with his crown, or Tupac with all his tats showing. Like, you got to see other stuff from that session. So that was so awesome. And then they had a concert too. So Anderson .Paak performed Flying Lotus, and I don't remember who else was there, but I know there were a couple other people, but those main acts that I was really excited about. very, very talented people. There were just so many celebrities there too. I couldn't believe where I was at.
It's a trip, right?
Yeah, like I knew it was going to be a big event, but after I was there, the setup, the types of people that were there, you know, the aesthetic of it, like, it was just very, very upscale. And, you know, I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, I just decided to tag along. Like, this wasn't even something that I was, like, looking into. And then it just turned out to be this really dope experience. But I guess that's also what made it better, because it was so unexpected.
Yeah, no, I've definitely been in your shoes when I was starting out and, you know, going to college and taking journalism classes and, you know, putting yourself out there, because if you've never been to the USC Annenberg Space Photography, it's way out in the west side. And it's like a pain in the butt to get over there. And, you know, it's intimidating too, because you see that it's an opening, everybody is looking right and tight and is there with a purpose. And I mean, for me, when I was at these kind of spaces, I always felt like, oh, look at me, I'm just a little journalism student, you know, I don't know, you know, I'm kind of unsure of myself. And then it's not until I get into my headspace of like, all right, cool, I'm here, I know what I need to do, who do I need to talk to, I have my questions, let's get to work and make this happen.
Yeah, exactly. Just diving in, I think with just anything, that's probably what I've learned the most, is like, you're not really going to be able to just have somebody. I mean, sometimes you will have someone to sit down and train you and walk you through, but really we're just kind of all winging it and just figuring it out along the way. So it's a very scary thing to do, but it's also the most fun, because you're just so open to any sort of direction, and like anything that just comes your way, you're just kind of prepared to just go with the flow and figure it out regardless of what's happening.
Yeah, most definitely. And do you see yourself still dipping your feet into journalism every once in a while?
Yeah, I do still want to right now. I haven't been able to, because I think everyone's more concerned about news regarding the coronavirus. Because really what I really want to do, and the more I've been with LA Taco, I realize I want to do, is just cover anything that's art related. I really feel like there's so much talent in Los Angeles. You know, so many people move out here that are really great at what they do, but perhaps they might not make it to the radio station, but they still deserve some recognition, some help to be really in the spotlight. Because, you know, there's so many different levels of artists that we have out here. Some are more independent, so they have a smaller fan base, but they're still successful and living off of their music. I think that's something that should be created to be more so the norm here in LA, because there's just so much untapped, so many untapped resources that we have here. And really with the poets I was first covering, I still want to continue to do that, but you know, as you mentioned, I got to go to Contact High, so now I'm starting to see other avenues that are creative that could also use me as a reporter, you know, to really talk about, especially when we talk about music. I think there's this big misconception that music is kind of dead right now, especially because you go on the radio and it's very repetitive, it's very mainstream. But there's so much great music that's coming out, it's just not on the radio.
Oh, most definitely.
You know, because of the internet, the floodgates just kind of opened, and there's just so many artists out there.
Yeah.
And it's good and bad, because everybody gets an opportunity, but then you also miss out on so many people, because you're trying to keep up with so many others also. So that's the only hard part, but yeah, I've been able to come across like a really wide array of people that I'm hoping to feature on LA Taco soon, either at the end of this year or maybe start of next year once things kind of go back to normal. But that's really like the avenue I want to pursue.
And at the same time, because you are involved in art spaces, and like you said, you have, you know, relationships with poets, so you have a better understanding of their work and can get a different kind of interview with them. You also cover the Salvadorian community and some of like the events that have been happening around town that for somebody like me who's not Salvadorian would probably would have never even heard of them, but because I saw it on LA Taco and it was you writing it, I was, you know, oh, like, wow, this is really cool and I'm glad it's happening. So obviously you're still going to continue some of that too, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't, I guess, have too much going on that's specifically around being Salvadorian and Salvadorian culture. But when I do know of stuff that I think is more so relevant to me, because that's kind of hard to explain. So like, there's a lot of Salvadorian or a lot of Salvadorian platforms. But it's been really hard to find ones that you truly identify with. So, like, for example, I know Gabby's Food Lunch, which is a really huge Salvadorian platform that very positive image, and their mission I can definitely stand by, which is just to show Salvadorian people in a positive light. So just, if I want to cover more stuff that's for sure aligned in that direction, because I've had a hard time finding platforms that I really stand behind. And so another thing too is with any culture, you always have to kind of also remind people, like, anything that I do cover or anything I do, poetry is, Salvadorian ribbon, you know. Always want to center my work around specific things Salvadorian also, just because I feel that then it becomes kind of like expected, and I don't want anyone to ever try to like put me in this bubble, like, you need to write the Salvadorian narrative. But it's like, whatever I do, it is the Salvadorian narrative. You know what I mean? So I always try to just, yeah, you know, it's like, it's the Salvadorian narrative because I'm Salvadorian. So like, automatically, like, that's null and void.
Most definitely.
But I always try to just make that distinction.
Yeah, it's not, yeah, it's not until Netflix makes a show about your community and then makes you really mad, like, identified, that you're like, oh, damn, I guess we made it at some level.
Yeah, kind of, because when you do make it to that level, it has to be right, you know, it has to be done in the right way where everything's accurate. You don't want to feel like, wow, they just kind of watered down our culture, and actual words are, like, we don't need to fit in this mold, like, just tell the story for what it is so the audience can really see themselves in that. I think that's the most important thing.
Most definitely. So I'm glad you said that, because yeah, like you said, you wrote about Salvi's Who Lunch, and from, you know, being on the outside in and reading it, it seems it's also part of a generational divide, right? Like, the folks who are doing these kind of events are also younger.
Yeah, exactly. Because I feel like with our older generations, or at least just speaking for myself, I remember we would go to things here and there, but the vibe was just, it was just interesting. And I've talked to other people who are Salvadorian who can kind of share that same sentiment, where this really felt like it's moving in a positive direction. Like, we're just trying to highlight Salvadorian people, all the amazing stuff that they do, attach no sort of negativity or stereotypes to it, and just make sure that people kind of get a real sense of that. And I really loved what Salvi's Who Lunch was doing, because it was being put together by someone younger, so they just kind of understood more, I felt, like, what other younger Salvadorians were looking for, because there's definitely a big cultural divide, generational divide, just because of the history behind Salvadorian people, and what the older generations went through, and now the younger generation is trying to come up that never endured any of that. There's a lot of different viewpoints, and I think clashing of just the way we see things, and I think that also affects the stereotypes that have been formed against us because of the history behind Salvadorian people. So it's kind of unfortunate, but at the end of the day, I love being Salvadorian. I wouldn't have it any other way. So I'm for sure proud, and I want to try to just make sure that any representation I do provide is done in a positive light. And then outside of that, I'm like, I don't want to kind of then just be put inside that box, like I said, because I have so much to talk about. I have so many things. Even right now, as you've been asking me all these questions, I'm just like, oh, wow, like, I do that, and I did do that. I kind of forgot, so I want to explore so much and do so much. That's definitely going to be in there, but it won't be my main focus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think every group of folks goes through essentially growing pains of, you know, yeah, our ancestors, our parents, our grandparents sacrificed a lot and had to endure a lot to get us to where we are now, to be our best selves and to have these opportunities. And yeah, I mean, I felt that in my own way, where the past, you know, is still like kind of demanding of you to do things in a certain way. But, you know, we got to do things for ourselves while still being respectful and paying honor to what was done before us as well. Not forgetting, but then also continuing to look forward. It's very hard to balance.
Yeah, definitely.
So with that being said, did you grow up?
That's a complicated question, just because I don't really know. I grew up in two different places for, I guess, both halves of, or like an equal amount of time to where I was kind of there half of my life in each.
Mm.
So I lived in LA for 10, and then when I was 10, I moved to Victorville. And then I lived there until I was 18, and then I moved back to LA. So technically, I've been in LA longer, but I feel as though I was in Victorville for a very crucial time in my life, which was like middle school and high school.
Yeah.
So it's also hard to identify with LA.
That is a big dramatic shift, especially at that age, because yeah, I mean, you had enough time to be used to what LA was and your neighborhood, and then all of a sudden to be plucked and be put out in the Central Valley, which is so completely different. And being older, you know, it's a different experience, where I think if you're younger, you're able to, you know, I guess adjust to it a lot faster. But then being older, it's that process of you have to make new friends again, you have to start new schools, you have to start all over again socially.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big shift, and even while I continued to live out there, I always felt like I wasn't from there. But then when I moved back, it was funny, because then I was like, okay, well, I'm not from here either, so I don't really know. I don't really know what to claim.
Ni de aquí viene allá.
Yeah, I'm kind of just a little bit of both.
No, I think that's awesome, because I think it's very rare to have that experience of living out in a different community. I think for a lot of us, we it's a privilege, and it's also, you know, kind of like a hindrance that you get to stay in the same place for the majority of your life. So it's a unique experience, but then it's also very limiting, because you are stuck in a certain place for such a long time. And, you know, to be able to travel and go to different cities and see different communities, would you say that kind of helped you see things differently and grow as a person?
Yeah, I think it definitely, in some ways, I believe it saved me, because I remember around when you're around 10 years old, unfortunately, it's kind of the common age, I feel, depending on what your environment is, to kind of start getting into trouble. So I remember where kind of I was almost starting to get into fights and stuff like that, and then I ended up moving. So when I moved, I kept in touch with my friends, and a lot of them ended up getting expelled from school for fighting. They weren't doing well in terms of their grades, so it was kind of like I left right at the perfect moment, because I was taken away from all that and I was able to start over. And because I didn't know anybody, I couldn't really get into it in trouble. you know, I was all by myself. So, yeah, I always look back on that. Like, I wonder how my life would have ended up had I stayed, and, you know, what my future would have looked like. Being out there, it's more isolated. And then I guess just depending on what your crowd is, kind of like anywhere else, you know, you could do good or you could get yourself into trouble. But I think being out here in LA, there's just more things to do, more access to stuff. So I probably would have gotten into more trouble.
And then when you started high school, and I guess you kind of like touched on it, that you kind of, you know, you restarted and you put yourself in a different direction. Was that direction into being more, you know, scholastic, I guess, doing better in school and being on the college track and all that good stuff?
So I guess I was always interesting as a kid in that way, because academically, I always got good grades, but behavior-wise, I was always a problem. So I don't really know what that was about, because usually when you have behavior issues, your grades are also suffering. But for me, good grades was always great. I think it was just more so I was just hanging out with a different crowd at that point. So I just made new friends, and then I guess the things we got into just looked differently. You know, like, we're going to go and just hang out at the mall and kind of do more low-key stuff, because it's kind of all we can do anyway. We're being in LA, it's like, let's take the bus and just kind of
go have an adventure.
Go see where we end up at. You know, go to the park or go wherever. Like, just even that transportation made going places so much more accessible. You don't really have a system like that in Victorville. And even if you did, there's nowhere to really go. So I think that just kind of helped limit the shenanigans.
Dang. No, I mean, that puts it into perspective. You're right, because, you know, at my brokest when I was young, at least I could still, like, you know, get a day pass and go on the bus and go on an adventure.
Yeah, exactly. So I sound so bad. I mean, I was just, you know, a kid, and I don't really know what it was, but it was like everybody was getting into their rebellious phase at that time. And then for me, it just kind of, like, got put out really quick, because then I had to leave. But I think it worked out in the end, because, I was able to, from there, just be more motivated to come back out here, go to school, work, and kind of just start building my future. So when I did come back to LA, I was in a better position mentally and emotionally to handle all that it has to offer.
Mm. So when you said you came back when you were 18, was that because you were starting school back here? Did you move with your family, or you moved in with extended family or on your own?
Yeah, so I initially moved in with my grandparents. I moved back to the same house I lived in before I moved to Victorville. So I just moved back there. They kind of rented me a little room. And I just was going to Dominguez at the time. That's where I ended up graduating from. But yeah, I was going there and just working part-time. And then I moved into, like, a small studio. And recently I just moved again to a bigger space. But I had to leave LA because it was just getting way too pricey.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I kind of moved around a little bit after I came back. But for the most part, I've still been in LA. Like, I don't plan to leave. I'll never move to Victorville.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't think I would want to leave either. No, at this point, yeah, I mean, I'm in my rut. I'm comfortable in my rut here in Boyle Heights and in LA. But if, you know, opportunity knocks, I think the only other place, honestly, I would move to is the Bay. And I think I've said that before.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I love the Bay. The Bay is so beautiful. I would move there too, honestly. It's like a better LA. I'm sorry.
I don't disagree with that. In terms of, like, the different scenes out there, oh my God, yeah, it's just very different. I mean, I wouldn't say it's better, but it's so much more different. And because of that, it's new, it's refreshing, it's energizing. And here in LA, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm at that point where, like, yeah, I could go to that show and it would be fun, but I'd rather just stay home.
Yeah.
you kind of lose that energy to be like, yeah, this is going to be new and exciting. It's like, no, it's more like you've been there, done that, seen that. You know who you'll run into there. Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just chill at home. Okay, then. So with going to college and moving back to LA, when was it that you started seeing the foundation for your writing as a poet?
Oh, so I actually didn't get into poetry until I was at Dominguez. So when I was at Dominguez, I think it was my second year. I was a sophomore, and I had seen one of my friends perform some poetry, and it really inspired me to start writing poems. So I started kind of like doing little short pieces, and then a year later, I wanted to kind of do it a little bit more, or I guess kind of like advance myself as a writer. And I decided to join the poetry club at Dominguez. And I got introduced to spoken word poetry. And that was when I actually started performing. And because I had to perform poems now, I couldn't just write little, like, 30-second pieces anymore. They had to be more strung out. And that really helped develop me as a writer. And I really felt like, okay, this is what I might want to do for the rest of my life, because it was just such a freeing experience. And then it was just really cool to challenge myself emotionally, to elaborate on my thoughts and my feelings. Because even when you're kind of going through the motions, it's still hard to sometimes articulate how you feel. So developing that skill is something that's really transferable in almost every facet of your life. You just learn how to communicate, how to do presentations, like everything of your charisma, you know, everything about you just kind of shifts. So at that moment, that was really when the switch sort of happened.
Wow, that's a transition, all right. Because yeah, I mean, for a lot of folks, you know, when you get into writing and specifically poetry, it's very internal, kind of like what we were talking about before with your first piece that you shared, that it's very reflective and you know, you're just looking into yourself and analyzing, and sometimes you share it, sometimes you don't. But yeah, like you said, spoken word is so much more different. It's such a different flavor and style. How did you feel the first time doing it?
I was so scared because I had to start saying these poems out loud to people. And prior to that, I would just, you know, write it in my notes on my phone or write it in a notebook and kind of lock it away. But this time, sharing that, it was like, it wasn't just, oh, I'm reading this poem to you. It's really me learning to be vulnerable in front of people. So that was really hard to do, because you're always scared of what people might think, or if somebody might find what you're talking about offensive for whatever reason. Like, just a lot of things were kind of going through my head, but I think once, the more I did it, the less scary it became. And then kind of like how you were mentioning earlier, I just sort of realized that the nerves really never go away, so it's just something that I've just learned to deal with at this point.
Yeah, and I will say, I have seen you perform, and not just on YouTube. It kind of happened when I was doing research and, you know, just finding different, you know, spaces where you've been in LA Taco, your YouTube channel, things like that. And then I came across one of your pictures from 2018 from the Huntington Park Open Streets event where you performed. And it's like, hey, wait a second. I remember being there and I remember seeing you perform, because I remember that event was so much fun because it was out in the boonies of Vernon and Huntington Park and not like where Ciclovia does, you know, like downtown LA or Culver City or something like that. So obviously it wasn't as a crowded event as that, but it was super cool to be able to ride down the streets. And you know, I love doing that kind of stuff, riding my bike. I was playing my music. You know, I went down Pacific, and that's where they had the stage and all the bands performing. And I think after you performed, there was like a Sonora Dinamita band before or after. I can't remember.
It was after.
Yeah. So how did that come about?
I know, that's so crazy, because I'm like, if you know, you know. Like, I kind of opened for less than what I did. But not everybody's going to understand the significance of it. But one of my friends actually was doing some sort of production, something with, I think he was doing, like, he was either DJing or just doing the audio or maybe both. But he was there assisting with, like, all of the event coordination in addition to that. So that's why I'm like, not quite sure what his title was specifically, because he was just started doing it all. But he had told me that they were looking for a performer. And I was like, yeah, I'm down. You know, like, where I'm sometimes oblivious, similar to covering Contact High. Like, my friends will kind of tell me about events, and I don't really think much into it. And then I see the flyer, or, like, I'm sent more information. I'm like, oh, shit, like, it's kind of legit. You know, this is a big deal. So it was like that. Like, he just referred me, and I was able to perform. And I was actually, I think I wasn't supposed to go before them, but something happened, and they had to switch me around. So, yeah, that was sort of like the way the order of events ended up happening that day. But it was pretty awesome. I remember after I was dancing with my mom, and she was so happy. It was just so hot that day.
Oh, that's so awesome. Your mom got to see you perform.
Yeah, so I invited her because I knew La Sonora Dinamita was going to be there. So I knew she would, like, have fun. So, yeah, her, my dad came, my aunt came, and my grandma came. So it was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then since then, too, you also performed at, I forget the name of it, I should have wrote it down. But it was the it was like the art walk like event they had at the river.
Oh yeah, Friends of the LA River.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool too. Same thing. Honestly, all of my events have just happened through the writing community that I'm a part of, and I'm so thankful for everybody, because just through meeting people, whenever they've been asked, to refer somebody as a poet for an event, like, they just always kind of shouted out my name. So that same thing happened there. One of my good friends, Maria, she was working the event. She was tabling for, like, people as they were coming in. She would kind of help sign them in and give them their name tag. And she had asked me if I was interested in performing, and I said yes. And same thing, I had no idea what I was getting into. It was like a red carpet event, but I mean, even just aside from that, just the setup of it was so nice. It was a dinner in a garden outside, nice fountain, you know, that kind of aesthetic. And that was totally different for me. Like, I've never been to something that fancy before, especially to perform. And everybody who had donated to the organization was there. So it was kind of like a event mainly to just honor them and thank them for all of the money that they gave to help restore the LA River. It was a pretty big deal.
Nice. Yeah, I was gonna be like, well, I didn't get to see you perform, and now I know why.
Yeah, that one was closed. The only way to go was to buy a seat. So it was like a wheelchair event. You had to buy your seat, and that was a donation. So the more you wanted to donate, I don't know, maybe you're just doing it for the cause, or they gave you a better seating in the seating chart. But yeah, it was one of those things. I just kind of got lucky and was performing, so I didn't really have to do that. Not that I wouldn't want to, but I didn't. It was a big charity, so I didn't have the money to invest everything they were. So I also just played because of that, because I mean, I don't come from money like that in any way, so being around people that did, you just kind of feel a little intimidated, you know? But it was also really cool, because I took my mom, I had a plus one, and I took my mom with me, so she kind of got to experience something different that she probably hasn't before, just because, yeah, my mom's always been, like, a really hardworking lady, you know, she doesn't really go to stuff like that, so I was really happy to do that for her, too.
That's awesome. That's like celebrities when you read about that. You know, they get nominated for an award and they take their parents. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to bring them.
Yeah, it was like a mini celebrity.
Well, I think that's a good transition for another one of your pieces.
Oh, yeah.
So whenever you're ready, just share the title and do your thing.
I'll go ahead and share this one called For the Days You Were Alive. For the days you were alive, I promised to remember you before depression swallowed you to the ground, before your warmth turned cold. I will speak of the sun disguised as your shadow, how it followed you everywhere and blinded us from the truth. I will tell them you are love, course-shaping and life-changing, the friends with everyone and hugs after the first time meeting you sort of love. I will say you raced against the sky and won. You weren't perfect, just full of fear, full of discouragement. I will remember the nights you flew on paper planes of joy, the days you spent searching for home. I'll speak of goofiness, of laughter. I will tell them you were kind, that you always played good music, because your demons only grew tired after dancing. I'll remember the carefree person that uplifted spirits, the southern cooking, the singer on aisle 7. You were always positive, always silly, and oblivious to the cool lurking inside of your caged heart. Its bars hit the bruises, but caused you greater pain. Like the devil can't hurt the angel if it's hidden, but the angel cannot soar in tight spaces. It planned to escape your body, cut open a hole large enough to stop life's beatings. I now remember the days that could have been and never will be, that this isn't true, this can't be. I will tell them God has a lot of explaining to do. How we last ended on bad terms and it's not important anymore. I'll tell them I wish I said this when you were alive, before I speak of the depression that swallowed you to the ground, before your warmth turned cold. I promise to say you were beautiful.
That's beautiful. What inspired that piece?
I actually had a friend who passed away about over a year ago, due to suicide. And it was just a big shock, between my whole group of friends, because it was a really great person, a very well-liked person. So when we heard that this had happened, it was pretty unbelievable. And I just wanted to write something that didn't commemorate my friend, I guess, for what his last days were, but more so the person that we all kind of knew. Because I think oftentimes people who are severely depressed and contemplate suicide often feel as though nobody would care or that they're alone. And the poem was really... I guess just as a reminder that people will care and people will be heard, and that's never going to be enough justification for somebody to do or not do something like that. But it's just at least to just let them know that they are loved, because he was definitely loved, and it was just such a tragedy when he was gone.
No, that's very powerful. What, for pieces like this, obviously you get your inspiration from, you know, things that are happening in your life. Do you have any influences in terms of folks that you follow, other poets, writers, inspirations like that?
Yeah, I try to read a lot. So what I do is I just alternate from a poetry book and then either a nonfiction book or a fiction book. Just anything really that will kind of help me improve as a writer. So I kind of just pull from everything, really. I sponge sometimes, because my environments are always in my pieces somehow. Just aside from my experiences, because not everything that I go through compels me to write. So that's just something I kind of just have to feel. But as far as specific writers, I don't have any yet. I did kind of get into poetry a little late in the game. As I mentioned, it happened in college. So as I wanted to get better at writing, that's when I started reading. So even that's still kind of new to me. Like, all of this is still a work in progress, because I don't I'm not like other writers where, you know, they're so well educated on all of these iconic writers and great books to read. I'm like actually just playing catch up. So anything that I can get my hands on that somebody recommends will end up inspiring me, because it's like, I believe there's something that drew me to that book or to that place or to that situation or that thing in the first place. And so that's kind of what I'm feeding off of.
But no, I can definitely relate to feeling that pressure of, you know, you feel like you're behind because everybody else is like well-read and well-versed and yeah. So well-informed about, you know, well, you're doing this and you don't know about that. And how can you be in that profession yeah. and you don't know about this food? It's like, well, calm down.
Exactly.
So I always have to work too.
Yeah.
But I think that also leaves me to the next question, which is right now, in this point in your life after college, you're balancing, like a lot of artists do, right? You're balancing the work life art situation, where I think it's safe to say that you, for the better part, you know you're working to, you know, to pay your bills, keep a food in your stomach, house, a roof under your head, all that good stuff. And then because of that, you know, your art kind of has to take a side hustle seat to it. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do try to write as much as possible, but it doesn't always happen. But I'm okay with that, because I also kind of experienced or got a little taste of what maybe my life would look like if I did writing 24/7. And I actually realized that I kind of enjoy a little bit of both. I like having my stable job and then pursuing writing seriously, but also give myself the room to where I'm not solely dependent on it and I can't just create for the sake of creating anymore. Because I think, above all, yes, I would like to monetize off of my craft, but that can't be my only motivation, because then I kind of lose the reason why I even started creating in the first place. And it's just for connection and expression. I think that's the most important thing to me, is just connecting with people. So I also reserve that for, I guess, when I'm in that feeling or that mood or emotion also, because I think we're not machines, you know. So as creatives, like, we can't just kind of pump out that energy all the time. You have to kind of keep some of that in reserve too, and that's where your job, or at least for me, my job comes in and lets me sort of replenish that until I'm ready to go back and share whatever it is that I need to share, because it's emotionally draining too, for sure. It might not be as physically taxing like their job, but it's still labor. So I try not to make the one thing I really do love into labor. I don't want to look at it that way.
Oh, no, I definitely feel you on that. It is exhausting, because, I mean, you're sharing so much, and sometimes it can get so personal that, you know, those reserves just go on empty. And I think of it sometimes as like, all right, well, let's just, you know, go through it a little bit, and hopefully life itself would happen, and then those batteries will get replenished in one way or another. Usually, you know, for folks, it's like you hang out with family, you hang out with friends, you have a nice vacation somewhere because, you know, you're lucky enough to have that. And then you come back stronger and you're like, all right, cool. Now I can keep doing this and keep moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And especially for writers, I've noticed that that's kind of always a thing too. You know, a writer will have like their daytime job as a professor, but then they do a bunch of freelance writing on the side, and you kind of get a little bit of both, because, I mean, just as an artist, there's no real assurance ever. So especially like when you need things like benefits and insurance and stuff like that, your day job really comes through. And I think I also just took a note out of Roxane Gay. She's a really, really, I guess that would be a writer I definitely look up to. But she came to speak to one of my writing classes one time, and she basically said that, you know, having her day job really gave her the flexibility to do what she wanted as a writer. And as a writer, having her day job gave her flexibility to do what she wanted as a writer, but also just vice versa. You know, she could do whatever she wanted in her day job because she also had her writing gig as a backup. So she never felt confined to either or. Like, she always knew she was going to be okay because there was something else that she had to support her. And I really felt like that made a lot of sense because I do like structure and I like my stability. And I can have that and still do something that fulfills me and never feel like I'm being told what I need to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've definitely watched interviews where Roxanne totally gives that same kind of advice, but it usually came from the perspective of somebody asking, what advice would you give to somebody who's a beginning writer or wants to get into the profession or something like that? So she frames it more as of like, look, if you're going to go into this field, the creative field, you're going to be struggling. So might as well have, you know, your job on the side and make sure your ducks are in order, because it's going to be a long time before you're able, like you said, you're able to make a decent living off your art. And it's, I think for her, yeah, I think, yeah, her, you know, being so successful and being so well known now and still keeping that kind of balance is like, yeah, it's very, don't quit your job yet.
Yeah, no. And I think also, of course, to each their own. Some people, they want to be the best writer or the best musician ever, right? And so they pursue that and make that their sole focus, so all their energy goes into that. And that's great. But as I've gotten, I mean, as the years go by, I want to say, I just keep thinking more and more, like, what do I want from life? And I'm okay with not being the biggest writer or the best writer. I just want to do whatever feels true to me. And that's enough. And, you know, I also want a simple life. I don't seek fame for any reason. I mean, I see what celebrities go through, or even someone like Roxanne Gay, you would definitely say she's a celebrity in the writing community. And the stuff she has to do sometimes on social media with people just trolling her, you know, I'm totally fine with, like, just kind of doing my thing and just being behind the scenes and in the cut, and you know, I don't want all that extra attention. I hate drama, so
it's a lot.
I'm very fine with whatever success I do amount to, because I know what it would come with to get to that point, and that's just not important to me anymore. I think at one point I definitely felt like I want to be a famous writer, kind of like J.K. Rowling, but it's like, realistically, you know, why? Like, I'm content with where I'm at, and I think sometimes you get so caught up in, like, the ego aspect of it, you know, that we kind of fail to see, like, even those people want the most basic things, you know, like their family and their relationship and their friends. So that's more so the outlook I'm having right now, which is also why, like, I'm okay with just kind of doing both and just seeing how things go. But, I mean, if it does turn up that I end up just doing writing full time, then great. But, you know, that came naturally. It wasn't something that I was just, like, so focused on, because there's just too much going on, especially with coronavirus. You kind of really see, like, dude, nothing matters. Like, you know, there's a pandemic going on. It doesn't matter who's famous, who's rich, who's done this, who's done that. It's like, at the end of the day, the most basic thing that mattered was, you know, being with your loved ones and just making sure you're all healthy and you're safe and you're happy. And those are, like, the real wake-up calls I've kind of been having within the last couple of years.
Oh, man, it took me a while to get there.
Yeah.
But no, I definitely feel you on that. It really puts things into perspective. And you kind of, you know, reassess what's really important and what you're working toward. Because, yeah, you can just, it's so easy to get caught up in things. And this all brings me to my next question, which is, like I said, I saw some of your performances on YouTube. And if folks want to see it, I highly recommend it. So you started doing these like a year or two ago, and they're more performative and cinematic in the way you're presenting them. Can you talk a little bit about them?
Oh yeah, so I guess in a way it's like a boneless music video. I'm doing more visuals with my poetry, just to kind of, I guess, reinforce the message that I'm trying to say. It's a different medium to communicate that message. I mean, unless people are coming out to see me perform, there's really no other way to have them tune into my poetry unless it gets published, which I don't do very often. So then there's YouTube. And I mean, initially I was just recording myself perform, but I just felt like there was a stronger way to really help people see what it is that I'm talking about. Because you can read about it and have your own interpretation, but as I'm feeding you these images, this is what I want you to see. This is what you should take away. So the videos were just really to help bring those stories to life. And they're really fun. I really, really enjoyed doing those. I actually want to do a few more. But I think it's just more so a different way to connect with my audience, and hopefully at their studios it's more powerful. We feel the message in a totally different light, because I can read it all day, but seeing the video and just kind of like having the peaceful images that go along with the verbiage, it gives it a whole different feeling. It changes the entire mood of the poem for sure.
Oh, that most definitely. That's what I was going to say, that yeah, it's a different medium. You're presenting it differently, and yeah, you I think you said it greatly. It's, you are putting your work in a different form, so you can have more longevity and a wider reach for folks to be able to check it out. Cause yeah, it's in the immediate future. It seems like we're gonna be home for a while, so there's not gonna be readings. Like you mentioned earlier, you're working on a book, but you know, you're also still in that transitional phase of, like, you're still working on it, and it'll be a while before it probably gets published. So yeah, the fact that, you know, you switched to video and doing some of these on YouTube, and that you're also partnering with other creative folks, other filmmakers, to make these, you know, videos happen, it's great. And it's honestly, like, it's refreshing too.
Yeah, I think people will start to see more of those. Even like certain commercials, you know, just even the voiceover, depending on how it's done, it could still be considered a poem. So I've definitely been seeing them pop up a little bit more, which is also what kind of inspired me to get on that wave. But it's still relatively new, like you said, so it's not something that many people have been exposed to, and I'm hoping will become more common within time, because they're really cool. And I think what's different from like a music video is that you're not distracted by music or flashy stuff happening, you know, money or maybe like just whatever is happening in the video that's related to the song, right? This is like a message that's intended to be delivered with purpose. Like when someone's especially doing any type of poetry, it's like they're trying to get you to see something, to understand something. And with music, right now it's more so for entertainment, so that's why you don't really see too much of that, even though some artists definitely hone in on that intention. But without like the music in the background, it's just you and the words, and I think that's what helps that message become more clear and really stand out. So when people hear it and they see it, they're like, whoa, okay, you know, like, you're talking to me about something real. This isn't just, like, you wanting to kind of show off whatever writing skills you have and kind of throw me off with maybe, like, thoughtless lyrics, right? It's like there's a lot going on here that I need to pay attention to. And the images, I guess, kind of like how I explained the music video would be a distraction, but the images are specific to reinforce that message. Whereas with videos, sometimes it doesn't even always align with what the song is about. You know, it's just a music video.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that. So normally this is the part of the show where We would talk about upcoming projects you have going on or anything, performances, but I don't think there's going to be any of those coming up soon. But you do have another interview coming up that's going to be public. So it's going to be on 4/27. I'm looking at my calendar here. That's next Monday. So April 27th, next Monday at 2 p.m. It's Poet Chats with Kamari Carter, right?
Am I? I don't recall.
I saw it on Instagram. There's a graphic for it.
What?
Yeah.
I don't think that's me.
Are you sure? I can text it to you.
Yeah. No, because I've done that Poet Chats with her before. But I don't recall scheduling.
Maybe I got it wrong, and that was the one you did before.
Maybe, yeah, because I don't have one with her.
Or maybe they're just like...
they're going to surprise me?
No, it seems they're already surprised. I thought I was going to say that maybe they're replaying the interview.
Oh, yeah, you know what? I think it was from last year.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
So that's what happens when you don't put the year on your dates.
Oh, that's funny.
No.
Wait, what do I have going on? No, the only thing that's really supposed to be happening for me is, well, my book was supposed to come out July 15th. But
hey.
Because so many things kind of got shut down for a couple of months. The authors who were supposed to release their book from March up until now were postponed. So all of the other writers got pushed back until those authors released their books. So I'm kind of just like TBD right now, and hopefully either at the end of the year or early next year my book will be out. But I feel like, I don't know, I keep delaying this because I've been telling people next year, and this time it was for sure, but a pandemic decided to happen. So now it's till next year. So
all right, well, something to look forward to.
Yeah, I know, I'm so bummed because I was really ready to just put it out there and get it over with, but I think it works out in the end because more time is always helpful. So
yeah, so you'll be able to work on it, and then once it's ready, I'm sure you'll probably have like a book release, and you'll probably be reading something from it as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right, then. Well, ignore what I said. There is no interview on Monday, April 27th. If folks want to follow you on social media, they can follow Astrid on Instagram at Poet Astrid. And yeah, just keep up with what she's doing. You know, she's got that book coming out. And hopefully we're all able to go back outside pretty soon.
Yeah, seriously.
Then, before we close out, do you have any shout outs?
I just want to say shout out to LA Tacos. You guys have been holding it down during this coronavirus pandemic. You guys have definitely been reporting all the stuff we need to know. I miss you guys. I hope to get in touch soon, but I guess hopefully, like you said, once all of this dies down, we can be in touch again. But yeah, you guys are great. So shout out to you.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you again, Astrid, for making the time for the interview. You know, I really appreciate it.
Yes, of course. Thank you also.
Cool. So that's been Astrid, everybody. And this has been Orale Bull Heights.